order. Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
21 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The following members are excused from the call of the House today. Representative Furness, Representative Sund, Representative Schultz, Representative Cato, Representative Wallace, Representative Pierce, Representative Phillips, Representative Kopanen, Representative Davis, Representative Zawacki, Representative Ellis. Following representatives are excused later today. Representative Miller after session, Representative Davidson after session, myself after session, Representative Boucher from 9:30 p.m., Representative Frank, Representative Boucher from 5:30 p.m., Representative Frank from 9 p.m. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Swackhammer be excused from the call of the House today. He is ill.
Okay, Representative Davis is present and in the chambers, but Representative Swackhammer is ill and thus excused from the call of the House. Our chaplain today is Reverend Kermit Wilson. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Praise the Lord, all you nations. Extol him, all you peoples. For great is his love toward us, and the faithfulness of the Lord endures forever. Praise the Lord. Lord Jesus, we thank you for the love that you give to us daily. It comes from you in many ways, from spouses and children, from relatives and friends. Thank you for these gifts. Lord, may you watch over our family and friends, keep them safe from harm. May your presence abide with us today and forever. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
Representative Hanley, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread across the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 73rd legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 73rd day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal for the 73rd legislative day as certified by the chief clerk be approved.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal before you? Hearing no objection, the journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce some special guests from Anchorage who are representatives of the ARCO Civic Action Group. And sitting in Gallery B is Mr. Joe Gallant, Paul Roof, Ms. Carolyn Haynes, Mrs. Kathleen Plunkett, Teresa Gorp, Denise Gwynn, Anita Hamilton, and Barbara Vine. Would you please welcome them to Juneau?
Representative Frank, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, down for Fairbanks today, we have Barbara Martin. She's the new Assistant Superintendent for Business for the Fairbanks North Star School District. Please help me welcome her.
Any further guests for introduction? Okay, this brings us down to messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate approved the following citations and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Dramedy and honoring Millie Andreini.
Rules for calendaring.
And they've also sent to enrolling a citation in memoriam Anne E. Carroll. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 55 Resources, thus passing committee substitute for Senate Bill 55 Resources amended House, an act establishing the Minto Flat State Game Refuge and providing for an effective date, and they adopted the House letter of intent. Mr. Speaker, the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 375 Rules, thus passing committee substitute for Senate Bill 375 Rules amended House, relating to licensing school bus drivers and providing for an effective date. The Senate has passed House Concurrent Resolution 40 with the following amendment, and this amendment has been placed in your limbo file. And so House Concurrent Resolution 40 amended Senate, designating a year of friendship with Finland, and it is returned for consideration. The Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill 279 Finance, effective date added with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 279 Finance, an act relating to club licenses for the sale of alcoholic beverages and providing for an effective date, and it is returned for consideration. The Senate has passed and sent for consideration Senate Bill 463 by Josephson by request, an act relating to unused airline tickets.
That will be referred to two standing committees, Transportation and the Finance Committee.
Sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 63 by Jones, Eliason, Jaroff, and Fisher, opposing the closure of the Stikeen Area Regional Supervisor's Office of the United States Forest Service.
One standing committee, Resources.
Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 35, State Affairs, by the State Affairs Committee, relating to alcohol-related birth defects awareness week.
Health, Education, and Social Services.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down in the daily order of business to reports of standing committees.
The State Affairs Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 67, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to legislative confirmation of the board members of public corporations of the state, recommends it do pass, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Omer, Chairman, concurring Omer, Donnelly, Martin, Menard, and Hoffman, signing do not pass, Davidson, having no recommendation voucher. House Joint Resolution Number 67 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 174, providing alcohol to persons under 21 years of age, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Omer, Chairman, signing do pass, Omer, Menard, Boucher, and Martin, having no recommendation, Davidson, Donnelly, and Hoffman. House Bill 174 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 252, Supplemental Benefit System, recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute by the State Affairs Committee with the same title and do pass. Report was signed by Omer, Chairman, signing do pass, Boucher, Hoffman, Omer, and Davidson, having no recommendation, Menard, Martin, and Donnelly. House Bill 252 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 310, Payment Under Public Construction Contracts, recommends it be replaced with CS by the Finance Committee with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, and Davis, having no recommendation, Frank and Brown. House Bill 310 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 389, Recovery of State Costs for Oil and Hazardous Substance Releases, recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with the same title and do pass. Report was signed by the Vice Chair, Omer, citing do pass, Omer, Grunberg, Navarre, and Cotton. Taylor has no recommendation. House Bill 389 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 407, School Account in the Alaska Permanent Fund, recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute Hess with a new title, reports it back as follows with a fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Ellis, signing do pass, Ellis, Kopanen, and Grunberg, having no recommendation, Hudson, Hanley, and Phillips. House Bill 407 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 459, Liability for Releases of Hazardous Substances, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute Resources with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Omer, Vice Chair, concurring Omer, Cotton, Navarre, Grunberg, and Taylor. House Bill 459 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 495, A Fisheries Education Curriculum, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute Hess with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, and Davis, having no recommendation, Porcheau, Rieger, Frank, and Brown. House Bill 495 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 510, Transferring Responsibility for the Issuance of Certain Fishing, Hunting, and Trapping Licenses, Tags, and Identification Cards from the Commissioner of Revenue to the Commissioner of Fish and Game, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute Resources with a new title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Gall, Frank, Porcheau, Rieger, Swackhammer, Boyer, and Brown, having no recommendation, Larson and Davis. House Bill 510 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring 1988 Diamond Links Boys Nordic Ski Champions by Representative Hanley. Citation honoring West High School Girls Nordic Ski Team 1988 State Champions by Representative Hanley.
The citations for our consideration will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
House Concurrent Resolution 52 by the Rules Committee by request of the House members of the Joint Committee on Economic Recovery relating to state economic indices and reports.
The Labor and Commerce Committee and the Finance Committee.
House Concurrent Resolution 53 by the Rules Committee by request relating to the implementation of local hire through improved cooperation between employers and schools.
Health, Education, and Social Services and the Finance Committee.
House Joint Resolution 72 by the Rules Committee by request of the House members of the Joint Committee on Economic Recovery relating to the residential real estate market.
Labor and Commerce and Finance.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to our daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on that calendar?
House Bill 416 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, enacted relating to Alaska National Guard and Alaska Naval Militia retirement benefits and providing for an effective date. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 416, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Omer Chairman, signing do pass. Boucher Martin, Davidson Omer, Menard, and having no recommendation, Hoffman. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams Chairman. Concurring, Adams Porschel, Larson Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, Wallace, and Frank. Having no recommendation, Gall, Brown, and Davis. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, we do not have the necessary number here to advance. So would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 541 by the Finance Committee, enacted relating to income tax returns and payments. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 541 Finance with the same title and do pass. The report also was accompanied by a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Porschel, Rieger, Davis, Boyer, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, Gall, and Frank. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 541.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Finance has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
The bill will remain and be in third reading on the next time we meet, next session, next calendar. Would the clerk read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill 369 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to veterans. We are in third reading, Mr. Speaker, and I have a title amendment on my desk.
Third reading and under debate, and we have a title amendment. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a title amendment, and as we're going through from time to time, we'll find bills that we need to tighten up. This happens to be one of them, so we don't have a Christmas tree when it goes across and narrows the title. I move and ask unanimous consent that the title amendment be adopted.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the title amendment? Any objection? Hearing no objection, the title has been amended. The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 369, amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk take the roll?
26 yeas, no nays.
We have a problem here. Would the clerk please void the roll? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 369, amended title, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
28 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 369 has passed the House.
What is that, Mr. Speaker?
There's a... Okay. The clerk reads the next item on today's. Representative Herman?
Yes, can we maybe go up the calendar, introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Mr. Speaker, in Gallery A, I'd like to introduce...
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back down to the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on that calendar?
House Bill 530 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to the establishment and operation of a state boarding school by the Department of Education and providing for an effective date. The HES Committee has considered the bill and reports it back as follows. Report was signed by the co-chairs Kopanen and Ellis. Signing due pass, Kopanen. Having no recommendation, Hudson, Donnelly, Hanley, Phillips, and Ellis. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it due pass. The report was signed by Adams Chairman. Concurring, Adams, Porchot, Larson, Gall, Rieger, Boyer, Frank, Brown, Davis, and Swackhammer. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. Having one amendment, Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number one.
Objections. How complicated is that amendment? We better take it at ease so it's distributed.
It's being duplicated at the moment, but maybe we should have it at ease.
Okay, with the House stand at ease. The bill, of course, is before us in third reading, and the amendment is being duplicated. Representative Pettyjohn?
Mr. Speaker, I move that we return to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Hearing. Mr. Majority Leader?
Just a point of order. I think it's difficult to vote on that without knowing what we're talking about.
Right. We could stand at ease, Mr.
Speaker. Okay, with the House stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had a motion to return the bill back to third reading for the purposes of a specific amendment. There were objections. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, again, I would renew. I believe every member should have a copy of the amendment on their desk. So at this time, I would renew my motion to return to second reading for a specific amendment. I think the amendment is pretty self-explanatory.
Any objections to the motion to move back to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Mr. Majority Leader? The House stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had a motion to go back to second reading. Are there any objections to going back to second reading for the purposes of amendment number one? Any objections? Hearing no objection, the bill is before us in second reading. Mr. Minority Leader?
I move the amendment, Mr. Speaker. Ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection, Representative Adams.
Basically, Mr. Speaker, on my objection is basically we already do this at the one boarding school we have, and we have 84% from rural and about 16% from the urban centers. And basically, when you use public funds, you have to admit anybody according to this particular standard. Regardless of race, sex, creed, or color. So with that, I'll remove my objection, Mr. Speaker.
Any objections to amendment number one? Any objections to the amendment? Representative Porchot.
I think that's true with race, sex, creed, national origin. I'm not sure that that's true with location and type of residence. I wonder if we could get... I'm not sure what the criteria is that they use for admission relative to location of residence. I was under the assumption that there is some favoritism or some encouragement of people from rural locations to go to the state.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the reason I offer the amendment is that I wasn't sure if there was discrimination with regard to admission to this school in the past, and if and the chairman of the Finance Committee has indicated that there hasn't been, and apparently that's a surprise to at least the prior speaker, but I feel that the educational mission of a boarding school certainly can include benefits to students that come from all different places in Alaska. I don't think it should be just designed solely for rural students. The finance chairman indicates that a fairly healthy percentage of the present student population is not from rural Alaska, and I think the students and the admission standards should be broad enough to allow any young Alaskan who would benefit from this experience to have an opportunity to participate in it. I think to do otherwise would be discrimination, which I don't think we should have.
Are objections maintained, Representative Davis?
I'm not sure if I object to the amendment or not, but let me just see if I can get a clarification here. We've got the way the school is now structured, we have a lot of the students that come from the rural areas of the state's small high schools, and I wonder if with the adoption of this amendment, this would probably change it to be such that it doesn't matter where they come from, so that the large high schools would be competing against the small high schools, which are predominantly in the rural areas. And I guess I would have some concern, because it would certainly change the character of the school from basically that of students from very small high schools that maybe don't have the optional the option of a curriculum that that they do from a large urban center. So I don't know what the outcome of this amendment will be exactly.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think in answer to some of the questions, if we just look at the paragraph above, it says, preference for enrollment must be given to students currently enrolled at the boarding school and to students whose educational, emotional, or family requirements warrant attendance at a school in which they will also not receive only their academic training but also their housing. So basically, I stand in support of the amendment. I think it just clarifies what's already understood.
Representative Gull.
Could we stand at ease?
Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before they had ease, we had amendment number one before us and under debate. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
29 yeas, no nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I have some concerns on this bill, and they're very minimal, I believe. A concern is that just in the passing this amendment here, we're not discriminating against any students that are coming into the system. But I think we are discriminating on page 4 and line 25, we have status of employees. The employees of the state boarding school are state employees. And I believe that with a state register and the personnel system, that is a discriminatory system. I think it's a closed system. It's a complex system, and it's a very burdensome system. People in rural Alaska have a hard time getting into that system, and I think if we're not going to discriminate against students, I think we shouldn't discriminate against employees. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to rise briefly here to speak in favor of this bill. I think the intent of it is to treat Mount Edgecombe like all other schools in Alaska, that the academic portion will be placed under the foundation formula so that they'll be funded like all other schools. And, of course, at the same time, addressing the housing questions and concerns that have taken place. So I urge passage of this piece of legislation.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 530 amended pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk take the roll?
29 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 530 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage of House Bill 530 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Representative Larson, objection?
No.
Okay. Hearing no objection to the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Larson?
Yes. Patient Henry,
please.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you. Today I'm very fortunate. I have two girlfriends in Gallery A. One is my wife that I've introduced in the past, and the second is my daughter, Michelle.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Navarro?
We have a brief at ease.
Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate Joint Resolution 58 by Kurtula and Zemanski relating to Cordova, Alaska as the home port of the United States Coast Guard cutter Sweetbriar. We are in third reading, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, we're in third reading and under debate. Is there any debate? Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In the absence of our own distinguished chairman of the House Transportation Committee, and also upon the request of the prime sponsor in the other body, I'm very pleased to rise in support of Senate Joint Resolution number 58 that requests the Commandant of the Coast Guard to keep the Coast Guard cutter Sweetbriar assigned to its current home port in Cordova. And some way, this is really quite fitting for me to speak to it because the cutter Sweetbriar was the first ship where I served my apprentice seamanship in the 1950s, and I've also served as a captain of a Coast Guard cutter out of Cordova, so I really kind of know both the ship as well as the area. And I want to pass on to the members of this body, I think, the high value of the Coast Guard cutter and the Coast Guard presence in the Prince William Sound. It's a key element in the economy there. There's 110 men and women and children that constitute a large portion of the residency of Cordova on a year-round basis, and that's quite important because it shrinks down in the wintertime. She maintains a navigational system really all the way from Yakutat to the entrance of Resurrection Sound, and she's the first vessel if we ever have a major oil spill in that heavy trafficked tanker route that comes from Valdez out through the Sound. And she also is sort of the guiding shepherd or caretaker of several hundred commercial fishing vessels, many Alaskans that operate out of Cordova. And in the 10 years that she's been assigned there, she's logged over 130 rescues. And I think it's very important that we pass this resolution unanimously, if possible, and send it on to the Commandant to let them know that as they're talking and thinking about cutting budgets, that here's one ship and here's one place in Alaska that has the most activity for its area that I know of, and I believe it's very important that we make that message, and I urge the members to vote yes. Thank you.
Any further debate? Mr. Majority Leader?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise in support of this resolution, and I normally wouldn't have spoken, but I'd like to add an addendum to some of the comments that were made when we debated Senate Joint Resolution 55 on the Navy last week. And there was some concern that by expressing support for one branch of service, we were neglecting the other, in other words, the Coast Guard. And I don't think that was the intent of anybody. At least speaking personally, I would like to see the Coast Guard remain in Alaska, and I think almost all Alaskans feel that way. That the Coast Guard is very important, not only for safety, but also for the economics they bring. And we welcome our Coast Guard neighbors, and we're delighted to have one of their former members sitting in this body. Thank you.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Joint Resolution 58 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
29 yeas, no nays.
Senate Joint Resolution 58 has passed the House. We have some citations on the calendar, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a citation on the calendar, and then we'll get to the special order. At this time, I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the citation on the calendar honoring the Ringstad family.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the citation on today's calendar? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a special order on the calendar, not on the calendar, but I'd like to move that we put it on the calendar and move to this special order, the citation concerning Ricky Sipe.
Are there any objections to special orders? Hearing none, proceed, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the citation honoring Ricky Seif.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the citation? Hearing no objection, the citation has been adopted. This brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before this body? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have several items of unfinished business. May we just have a very brief at ease, please?
Will the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we're in unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have several items of unfinished business, and we will go into the limbo file immediately thereafter. First item of unfinished business, we have several requests for excused absence. I move and ask unanimous consent that the following members be excused from the call of the House. Representative Davis from 4:30 p.m. Friday, March 25 until plain time Monday, March 28. Representative Martin from 7:10 a.m. April 7 until plain time at approximately 6 p.m. Sunday, April 10. Representative Hoffman from 7 p.m. March 25, 7 a.m. Friday, March 25 until plain time Monday, March 28. And Representative Navarre from 5 p.m. Friday, March 25 until 8 p.m. Sunday, March 27.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the members that have been listed off by the Majority Leader are excused from the call of the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that we enter the limbo file at this time for one specific item, and that is for the House Bill 263.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, Mr. Majority Leader, we're in the limbo file.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I'm going to move and ask unanimous. I'm going to move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 263, thereby adopting the Senate Finance Committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 263. And I'm going to recommend that the members vote no, so that the Speaker may appoint a conference committee. As the members can see, the points of disagreement concern three sections, sections 104, 105, and 134. And I recommend that the members vote no so that this matter can be hashed out in a conference committee.
Is there any debate? Representative Taylor.
Yes, I just had a question for the Majority Leader. Could he please explain just roughly what each of those controversies are so that we might understand what we're voting on here?
Representative Cotton. With the House stand at ease. Back to order, Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Speaker. House Bill 263 was given a referral to the Resources Committee last year for one particular reason, and that was because of the sections that the Majority Leader described there, 104, 105, and 134. They had to do with another bill, and the other body was attempting to encourage this body to accept the appropriations and some other statutory language changes that were required to allow the interties to be built. And so 263 itself has had nothing to do with the Resources Committee. It's the Procurement Code, I believe. It's the program receipts, basically. So it's a finance matter. I think the other bodies acquiesced, and they're taking a different approach on that subject at this moment. So I think we have to get this into conference because the bulk and the original bill, House Bill 263, is important legislation. I think both sides want to see move forward.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to a committee substitute for House Bill 263, Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Barnes.
No to yes.
From no to yes. Representative Hanley.
From no to yes.
From no to yes. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. From yes to no.
From yes to no. Any further changes? Would the clerk take the roll?
5 yeas, 24 nays.
The House fails to concur in the Senate amendments. At this time, the following members will serve on that conference committee. Chair will be Representative Bershow, Representative Larson, and Representative Rieger. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House enter the limbo file to consider another matter, and that is the Conference Committee substitute for Senate Bill 410.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, the House Chair of the Conference Committee will briefly explain the Conference Committee report.
Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What we did in conference is we accepted the Senate language in Section B. The House had different language where they asked that only regional associations be allowed to contract for the hatcheries, and it go no further than that. And the Senate, they asked that the regional, in addition to the regional association, that they could also contract with other people. And so we felt that the floor amendment took into consideration some of our concerns, as well as we got assurances from Fish and Game that, well, the House had concerns that to go beyond, to not go beyond regional associations, that there would be, the outside people could come in and contract for hatcheries. We had that concern, and so I think that our concerns were taken care of by Fish and Game telling us that they wouldn't be allowed to contract, or they could stop the contracting of outside sources for hatcheries.
Representative Cotton.
I don't have a copy of the bill in my limbo file, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Sorry, apparently we don't have copies. Could we stand at ease while the copies
are the House stand at ease. The House come back to order. We have a conference committee report on Senate Bill 410. Representative Navarre.
Could we have a brief at ease?
Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? We still have before us the conference committee substitute for Senate Bill 410, and it's under debate. Representative Cotton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm speaking in opposition to the conference report. I still feel that the House is right on there. The way we voted originally, felt that if we are going to move away from state operation on these state-owned hatcheries, that it'd be okay to take that first step and go to contracting with the regional aquaculture associations. But this conference report allows it to go a step further, despite the assurances of the Department of Fish and Game that they'd be very careful about who they contracted with. I personally just happen to feel that that's a step further than we need to go. I might also disclose that I pay taxes to a regional aquaculture association in Lower Cook Inlet. We do pay 2% of our gross, and I don't think that influences my vote, but that reminds me that the best interests of the fisheries are guaranteed if a regional aquaculture association is the operator, and I don't feel that those guarantees are there if someone else is the operator, so my vote's a no.
Representative Gull. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd also like to speak in opposition to the conference committee report. I think we're treading on some real dangerous ground with regard to our fisheries resources and how we're going to manage them. If the state, in fact, is not going to manage these hatcheries, then I don't mind if the aquaculture associations operate them. They're nonprofit. The bulk of the members are commercial fishermen and others who are interested in the fisheries in that particular area that the hatchery would then be managed under. This is real dangerous territory. I think that our fisheries resource is too important to risk with this type of open procurement. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gull.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak briefly on the actions of the conference committee and try, if I can, to resolve some of the concerns that have been raised by the other members. First of all, these discussions were brought up at conference committee, and we did feel that they were resolved. That's what led to the unanimous support by the House for the conference committee report. I'd like to first address the, I think, the very important issue raised by the rules chairman, which I might add led me to be awfully concerned about whether or not we should pass this legislation at all. My feeling is that the state of Alaska has a responsibility to the common property resources of the people, and the fisheries resource is probably the ultimate common property resource, I guess, along with air and water, as far as the needs of the people of our state. The hatchery program is managed by the state, is required to respond specifically to that common property philosophy, to deal with all of the people who use our fisheries. And for that reason, the House took it upon itself to underline that particular issue, and it's found on page 2 of the conference committee bill, beginning on line 10. Sometimes, as people have discussed this legislation, and this is something that has to do with the bill, regardless of whether we talk about regional associations or any other contracted staff, when people have discussed the bill, I've heard them use the phrase transfer of hatcheries. And as a result, in order to establish clearly the legislative intent, at each committee meeting and on the House floor before we passed the House version, I rose to call particular attention to this language and to the fact that this bill absolutely does not allow and will not allow the transfer of any hatchery or the control over the philosophy of management of any hatchery to anyone outside of state government. What the bill does is allow the Department of Fish and Game to contract for personnel to operate certain facilities under the express control and supervision of the Department of Fish and Game. And were not that the case, I would be strongly opposing any form of legislation like this. The language, to make it as clear as possible, is contained in subsection F and indicates as follows, that the hatchery may be operated under a contract authorized under the section, but the management and production goals of the department must be followed, and that even the department, even the Commissioner of Fish and Game, cannot develop a private agenda for the management of any hatchery. But in fact, the department's very own agenda must be consistent with the Comprehensive Regional Salmon Plan approved under Title 16, Section 10375. The point there is to say that not only cannot the contractor, whether it's an association or an individual or what have you, not only cannot the contractor take over policy direction, but even the department is limited, as it is on its own hatcheries, by the requirement that it follow the comprehensive regional plan. And it goes on to indicate that the department can interrupt the operation mid-season, can cancel a contract arbitrarily, and can absolutely enforce that regional plan regardless of who is contracted staff person that may be providing staff services. Briefly on the other portion of the bill, which was brought up for discussion, subsection B, I believe it is, on page 1, section. The department is required first to go to those regional associations. And the department is required to contract with those regional associations if they are able to provide the necessary services. But if, in the process of negotiating an agreement, it appears that that association just really cannot do the job right, the intent of the bill is to say, well, we are not going to say to the fishermen of that area, hey, we're just going to close you down because your regional association couldn't quite do the job. We are going to speak with those association people, get their recommendations, and all this is required under statute, it's not a commitment by the department, get their recommendations, and then having consulted with them and understanding their concerns, then would consider looking at other possible people to contract with. But it's my personal belief that the regionals are going to be able to manage this in most cases. The department did have, I think, a legitimate concern that when they engage in a contract negotiation, and let me just back up one last point and point out to the members that if they go away from the regional, they don't have to take a minimum bid or anything of that sort. They are not covered by those kinds of restrictions. They can negotiate their agreement purely on the basis of who can do the best job, and they can veto any offer. At any rate, if the regional cannot do the job and they make a recommendation of someone else, the department can go elsewhere. I think the point to be made there is that when you're negotiating a contract, it's only appropriate that you not be totally locked in a box. We're not going to close down these hatcheries if we can avoid it. At the same time, we could run short of general funds. This provides them with a mechanism to seek staff and the kind of power that is necessary in a negotiating situation to ensure that they get responsible management once they've made a decision. So I think the conference committee spent quite a bit of time on this issue, was trying to respond to the concerns of the House, and did conclude that this language was adequate to do the job. So I'd like to respectfully encourage support of the members for the conference committee report.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise in support of the conference committee substitute. I believe, following the comments of the prior speaker here, who really has laid out, I think, that there's adequate controls for the state and the legislature to have the hand on management. It does, however, provide one more opportunity in the event the state does not fund the money to operate the thing as a state-operated hatchery, and the Regional Aquaculture Association is not able to meet the requirements for whatever reason, and I think there's some reasons why they may not be able to, that we could still continue to produce fish. And the fishermen that I've talked to from all over Southeast Alaska and other parts want to make certain that the high priority is that we continue to produce fish and keep the hatcheries operating. So I'd rise in support and ask that we accept the conference committee substitute.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess the comments that the representative from Haines made gives me a little bit more comfort. However, I think what we're doing is we're giving the department leverage in order to force, in some cases, the regional aquaculture associations to take over contract of hatcheries that they no longer want to operate or can operate. The hatcheries cost money to operate, and they provide a great benefit to the fishermen in all around the state. And we're going to be giving the leverage over to the department to say either you can take this over and operate it, whether they want to or not, or we're going to give it to somebody else. And what we left in the House, we left the option for negotiations between the regional aquaculture associations and the state to determine who ought to run them. If the regional aquaculture associations determined that they could not run them, then that onus would be put upon the legislature through the appropriation process to fund operation of those hatcheries. What we've done now is given the leverage over to the State Department of Fish and Game. I support allowing regional aquaculture associations to manage and run these hatcheries, but I do not support going out to procurement, and I will be voting against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to, through the chair, ask a question of the representative from Juneau that spoke about support for the conference report from fishing organizations. And maybe I'd just like to have him clarify that statement about who has expressed support for this legislation.
Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. The calls that we've received in our office are from individuals that come from the various organizations, including the Gillnetters, Southeast Gillnetters, and the Alaska Trollers Association.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the conference committee substitute for Senate Bill 410? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
24 yeas, 5 nays.
The House concurs, thus adopting the conference committee substitute for Senate Bill 410. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing none, the effective date... Oh, okay. Ready to vote? Shall the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
29 yeas, no nays.
The effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Navarre.
We have brief at ease.
The House stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? We're still under unfinished business. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, pursuant to Uniform Rule 48D, I hereby move that Senate Bill 32, penalty for possession of marijuana, be discharged from the Hess Committee.
Hearing objection. Mr. Majority Leader, the House entities. Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had a motion before us to discharge Senate Bill 32 from Hess. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I call the House on this particular motion.
Okay, the House has been called. Representative Hanley, you are seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I made this motion from the floor today because I think it's an obligation that I probably owe to the people who have been very patient in waiting for a hearing on this particular bill.
I object, Mr. Speaker.
What's your point of order there, Mr. Majority Leader?
I do not believe this motion is debatable.
That is correct, Representative Hanley, but there may... State your point of order.
Speaker, I would ask you to refer to Section 491 of Mason's, and I'd ask the Majority Leader to refer to that section as well. Section 491 deals with motions to withdraw bills from committee, and subsection 4 states that it is not in order to discuss the merits of the bill, and debate must be confined to the purpose of the motion. Debate is provided for.
Whether or not it's relevant to discuss it in that particular committee. Okay.
Whether or not to refer to the legislation.
I thought that perhaps we might be a little bit more productive. What Representative Hanley was driving at, we'll see. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An identical House bill has been in the Hess Committee. I have made written requests, verbal requests, requests during the interim, and I also made a motion during a committee to schedule this for a time certain. I have none of those requests have met with the committee scheduling that particular bill. I think House Bill 55, the identical bill, or bills were introduced because student government leaders across the state had asked us if we would address the subject. I think it's my responsibility as a member of this body to do what I can to have a hearing on this particular bill. I believe I have done that. My efforts have not met with any success. Therefore, at this time, I am moving that Senate Bill 32, the penalty for possession of marijuana, be discharged from the Hess Committee.
Representative Hanley, there was a memo that every member of this body should have received from the chairmen of the Hess Committee, Representative Ellis and Representative Kopanen, that indicated that they were going to have public hearings, and what they were doing was trying to get some information, because the information for the House bill, the people who were drafting that or getting the backup for it were instructed to do it only on one side of the issue. And that was the problem. And I do have that memo on my desk, and you also should have that memo.
Mr. Speaker, I do have that memo. Because of that memo, I have checked with the House Research Agency. They have indicated that is in rough draft. It will be to the committee on Friday. I had that information when I made my motion at committee hearing the other day. I assume that probably the co-chairs of that committee also had the information. I made a motion to schedule Senate Bill 32 for a date certain, March 31st. That motion was defeated. I do have that information, and I have replied.
Representative Hanley, to information that is available to the chair here, the co-chairmen of the Hess Committee told me that the early part of April they were going to have hearings on that.
I did not have that information. I have been told they've been going to have hearings. I have been given that information for a long time, but I have never been given a date certain.
Representative Gull.
Could we stand at ease, please?
The House stand at ease. The House come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To confine my remarks to a direct response to the member from District 9, the maker of the motion. As she well remembers, when she was in the Hess Committee and made a similar request this week, the co-chairs assured her on the record in public that they were moving as expeditiously as possible on this. And one thing that we need to have in this legislative body is to get our information and to be able to proceed in a deliberative manner, whether it's on this bill or any other bill. And this the committee chairs of that committee are doing. And I'm speaking on their behalf since they're not here on the floor to answer her in person.
Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak on the motion and then also personal privilege of the floor, since the letter that you refer to indirectly speaks of me. As you know, we've been on this issue for over 4 years. And for the first 2 years, no, 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 we're studying the issue, we're talking about it, no, no, no. This, 2 years ago, when Representative Hanley and I were asked to go to a high school meeting of the presidents, it was surprising to me the reason they called us there.
Representative Grunberg, state your point of order.
My point of order is the same, and I'd like to read the same provision of Mason's rules, and I'm quoting from section 491.4 at page 337 of Mason's manual. Debate in such cases on such a motion must be confined strictly to the purpose of the motion. For if this were not true, the merits of any question could be forced under discussion merely by such a motion to withdraw. And I emphasize, Mr. Speaker, the use of the word strictly, and I think we're straying in this case.
That is correct. The chair rules in favor of the majority leader, because you have to realize the motion to discharge, you may only discuss whether or not that particular committee can handle that type of thing, and it should be in that jurisdiction of that committee or in another committee. So you may talk about the jurisdiction of a committee, but not the subject matter. Representative Martin, proceed in order.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was only referring to what you said. A letter was written on behalf of the committee by me because you wanted more information. And this gentleman, the majority leader, asked that the delay is being done due to more information. I'd like to make it known that I've asked the chairman and the vice chairman of that committee. We have two full boxes of information, of books written way back in the 60s, of recent information come from the department today. The delay tact is awaiting and waiting and studying to death the issue is long overdue for an excuse. I mean, it just doesn't sell now. And I think the public has the right, as you know, you receive many telegrams all over the place. People want to have a hearing. And we're with you, Mr. Speaker. You have suggested that another body should have a hearing. And we agree. Let's discuss the issue.
Representative Gall, state your point of order. You must remember here that the motion to discharge, of course, once again, you may only discuss whether or not the appropriateness of that committee or the committee that it's going to be referred to.
Question.
I'm ready for the question. The question is, shall Senate Bill 32 be discharged from Hess? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
11 yeas, 18 nays.
The bill remains in the Hess Committee, and there will be a public hearing. Representative Navarre, the House stand at ease. Will the House come back to order? We're still under unfinished business. I have House Bill 543, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Education. That bill, House Bill 543, is in the Finance Committee. At this time, I'd like to move it back to the Hess Committee for hearing, and then it'll go back to the Finance Committee. Any further unfinished business? Announcements of standing committees or special committees? General announcements. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Children's Caucus will be meeting today at 4:30. The purpose of the meeting is to discuss not only the proposed budget amendments that the governor has sent to us on the Gitche Report, but also to discuss the composition of a permanent commission on children and youth. That meeting today at 4:30 in the Belts Room. Thank you.
Representative Springer.
Short update on the Iditarod. There's great unrest in Nome. For a day or so, about 700-plus dogs have been howling. The reason everybody suspects is that the poodle team has arrived. They made it across the finish line, and from what I hear is there are about 700 cross-eyed huskies with their tongues hanging out, running around in Nome right now.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Finance Subcommittee on House Bill 423, the Tourism Projects Bill, is going to have a public hearing on Saturday at 11 o'clock. This is going to be teleconference to Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Soldotna. If there are any other members who wish to participate, they're going to be out of town and would like to be teleconferenced in, or any members of the public who wish to speak, please let me know.
Any further announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the members would retain their bill packets on the House Bill 416 and House Bill 541 for Monday, those bills are in third reading.
Representative Larson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been asked to announce Daffodil Day. It says the first flower of spring, the flower of hope. And if you wish to purchase some daffodils today, they're $3 a bunch. And you can do so in my office. That's in the Capitol Room 502. In our Majority Leader's office, that's Capitol Room 216. And also in Representative Menard's office in the Court Building 606. And I'd urge everyone to purchase some today and help support the American Cancer Society. Thank you.
Any further announcements? Representative Taylor?
Yes, just a brief one, Mr. Speaker. The Alaska Loggers Association is going to be meeting in the community beginning tomorrow, Friday. And I would recommend and invite any of the members that would like to attend their meetings. They are open, and they will be held here in the hotels in the community. In light of current legislation pending in Congress, it may be of some interest or some note to go down and at least take a look at these folks, because we keep sitting around in this body. They may not be back here in a couple of years, Mr. Speaker.
Any further announcements? Special orders? Representative Moucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've learned in my years that there's a time to keep your mouth shut, but I guess I never really learned that lesson well. I'd like permission to speak on SB 32.
Are there any objections?
We voted earlier, and I am bound by procedural emotion, and I respect the discipline of the majority, but I want to go on record as strongly supporting SB 32. I think it's an issue that must be aired. We talk about public hearing, and I think I've kept silent on this, and I think it's time we get on with the business of dealing with another issue that is a very emotional one. I'm not so much concerned about the up and down vote on it. I'll listen to that. But I am very concerned that my 17-year-old daughter and the other people that I hope to be an example to in the state come to me and say, "Red, what's the matter? Why can't the issue be discussed?" I think it's high time. I think it's past time that this issue was given every opportunity to be discussed. I know we've said there's going to be a public hearing on it, but we've been saying there's going to be a public hearing on it for a long time. So although I voted against that, I think that as an individual legislature, I did want to express my feelings on that matter, sir. Thank you very much.
Representative Navarre.
Permission to speak on the same subject.
Any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My characterization of the vote that we had was to allow for public hearing in the HES committee. The chairman, co-chairman of that committee have already expressed that there is going to be a hearing, and that's what my vote reflected, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak on the length of session.
Are there any objections? Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've had distributed to the members a packet of information which includes a memo from Legal Services Director Tam Cook, the copy of Judge Sortel's decision, and the 1984 election results of the ballot measure limiting the length of the session, and a copy of Ms. Cook's memo regarding House Joint Resolution 37. Judge Sortel's interpretation is that we actually have a 121-day session. That would mean that our session will be over on May the 10th as opposed to May the 9th. HJR 37 was introduced to make clear what the length of our session really is and to make sure that we identify it as a 120-day session. By a 3-to-1 margin, the voters made it clear that the session should last only 120 days. I'd urge the members to act on living up to the voters' intent. I'd like to thank the State Affairs Chairman for assuring me that the bill will be heard, and I'd like to urge the leadership of the House to expeditiously hear the matter and resolve it and make clear once and for all that we have a 120-day session as the voters intended. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
Speaker, I request permission to the floor to speak on the North Slope drilling activity.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Speaker, this is the first of several pieces of information I hope to share with the members of this body about what's going on the North Slope and why and what kind of effects that might have on people that live in Alaska. We've been hearing a lot about what has or hasn't been going on and why. But here's a couple facts for you that we got from Petroleum Information Weekly. January 1987, there were 5 rigs operating on the North Slope. Standard had, six. Standard had 2 at Endicott and 1 at Prudhoe Bay. ARCO had 1 at Lisburn, 1 at Prudhoe Bay, and 1 at Kuperk. February and March, the same, except ARCO dropped one of their rigs. In July of 87, ARCO put the rig back up in Prudhoe Bay, and Susan Andrews from ARCO is quoted as saying that when she gave advance notice that this increased activity would take place, that it was strictly the result of higher oil prices. That's why they put that third rig back up in Prudhoe Bay. Today, or actually February of 88, there are 3 more rigs operating from Standard. They have 2 in Endicott, 3 at Prudhoe Bay, and 1 at the west end of Prudhoe Bay. ARCO still has 3 rigs going up there. So it looks like there are 3 more rigs February of 88 than there were in January of 87. And that's these are facts, and I'm not sure what other people have heard, but I've heard a lot of different numbers. And again, I'll provide further information as we get it from Petroleum Information Weekly.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the permission of the floor to speak on SB 32.
Are there any objection? Hearing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think perhaps a slight correction should be made in some of the statements. I have been on the Hess Committee for 4 years. There's been a bill to recriminalize or to increase the penalties for marijuana before that committee during that entire time. During the first session that I served in this legislature, there was a hearing scheduled. I think our majority leader was co-chair of that committee at that time. We did have a hearing scheduled. There were many people in Anchorage who were very enthusiastic about that, made plans to come down, testify before the committee, and the hearing was canceled. I think that was very upsetting. That was the only time that there was any response for a hearing during that session. This session, I had requested hearings again, as I had mentioned. I was told that the Senate bill would be the vehicle that we would be scheduling hearings. I'm very happy to know that there has been agreement that there will be hearings in early April. We now have 80 resolutions from people all over the state who are interested in this issue and are anxious for us to address it. So I'm pleased to know that early April we'll be having a hearing, and I'm sure that many people in the state will be pleased that we are addressing the issue. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request unanimous consent privilege of the floor to speak on the insurance liability crisis and a pending lawsuit.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have had distributed on the members' desks an article that recently appeared in one of the Anchorage newspapers stating that 8 states' attorney generals are suing a consortium of insurance companies charging fraud and a conspiracy to create the insurance liability crisis. As we've talked about a number of times on the floor of this House this year, there is indeed a serious economic crisis in the state. One issue, though, that has not often been related to the economic crisis is the lack of available insurance at affordable rates. And just yesterday, a gentleman who has a scaffolding company was in my office discussing his workers' compensation insurance rates, which he said has increased from $28 per $100 to $62 per $100. And he is in a high-risk pool, despite the fact that they have not had any accidents and has had an excellent safety record. The insurance companies are refusing to let him out of the pool because they are a small business with a premium of less than $50,000. And he and his broker have investigated that and they have found that, in fact, he just can't get any insurance for less. And this, he said to me, would drive him out of business next year if something isn't done on that aspect of the insurance crisis, the workers' compensation issue. A number of other professions and businesses have come either formally or informally before this body, the doctors, the air taxi operators, the fishermen, a whole slew of businesses and professions around the state. And it's not only in this state, as all the members who've gone to any of the interstate organizations, NCSL, Western Legislative Conference, etc., know, this has been a national problem, this insurance crisis. And the question has been in the back of many of our minds whether this was in fact a manufactured crisis or whether it was truly a genuine crisis. Well, after significant investigation, the attorney generals of Texas, California, New York, Massachusetts, West Virginia, Alabama, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Arizona have come to the conclusion that there is very significant evidence that this crisis has been manufactured by a group of insurance companies for their own purposes, and that this, in fact, has been designed to drive insurance rates up and to make things more difficult and for the insurance company's own benefit. And as a result, they are suing in federal court, alleging basically this was a conspiracy and a restraint of trade. We have had passed legislation on the floor this last year, House Joint Resolution 25, relating to federal regulation of the insurance industry, urging the repeal of the McCarran-Ferguson Act, which exempts the insurance companies from the Antitrust Act. And I would refer you, Mr. Speaker, and the members, to our Little Antitrust Act, which also exempts the insurance industry even from our Little Antitrust Act. I have spoken today with some concern on this issue after receiving public opinion messages, and I know you and others have received public opinion messages within the last few days also, urging that the state take a look at joining this lawsuit. I have spoken with the Attorney General of this state, Attorney General Scheibel, and they are most interested in pursuing the matter in conjunction with the other states. We are not at this time joining the lawsuit. They are pursuing it, but we are considering, for example, whether it would be advisable to file an amicus curiae, friend of the court brief in that, or in other ways participate through the Western Association of Attorneys General. And she and I and others will be working on this and coming up with a proposal to the body concerning this lawsuit and concerning the possibility that there is a very serious conspiracy and restraint of trade going on by this particular industry, which has affected so many of us here. And Alaska is particularly vulnerable because we're so small, we have such a large area, we are so far from the financial centers of this country, and have such a small population. And I think that this is a serious aspect of the current economic crisis that is driving small businesses out of business that the state must get involved in, should get involved in, and this legislature should take a leadership role. And I hope that the House Joint Resolution 25 is indeed considered and passed by the body. Thank you very much.
Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, I ask the privilege of the floor to speak on insurance rates.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Labor and Commerce, when they heard the workers' compensation bill came over from the other body, we added a mandated 6% rate decrease to that legislation. There's been a lot of discussion of that. There was an article in the publication, Legislative Digest or whatever it is. It's paid for. It's subsidized by alleged counsel, by the way, which I thought was incredibly one-sided and biased. I mean, it talked a lot about the Maine experience, which has virtually absolutely no relevancy here in this state. The mandated 6% increase that the House Labor and Commerce Committee added was based on testimony that we took, based on actuarial studies that were performed that the state paid for, about $30,000 for, Mr. Speaker, that said there was a 2% hard dollar savings in that proposed legislation. Plus, there was also testimony under duress by the industry, virtually, that there was at least a 4% saving in soft dollar costs. Now, that adds up to 6%. And if we're going to ask people to compromise, make some of the concessions and compromises that are in that legislation, and if it's the evidence is it's going to save 6%, then we ought to get a 6% cut, Mr. Speaker. And that was the philosophy of the Labor and Commerce Committee. And this
campaign of misinformation and these analogies to the Maine situation are just not relevant. Maine went for, I think, 7 years without allowing a rate increase. They were over 100% rate deficient before they had a company pull out of that state or before they had the real crisis that incurred. There's a big difference between being 100% deficient and a 6% mandated cost cut based on factual testimony that's the savings. In fact, when the insurance companies said they were going to pull out of Maine because they were over 130% deficient, Mr. Speaker, the Speaker of the Maine House of Representatives was quoted as saying, "I'm going to be happy to stand in the doorway and wave them goodbye because maybe now we can get down to solving this problem." And now, I don't want to see all the insurance companies pull out, Mr. Speaker, but these threats at 6% is unfair are simply unfounded. And that misinformation in that Legislative Digest, I think, was a real disservice to this body and the proposed cuts, which were based on evidence. And I just wanted to pass that on to the body. In addition to that, we put in, based on the testimony we've had, and we've had a lot of it, that the real way to save costs in this area is to reduce injuries in the workplace. If you want to cut down on workers' comp costs, you reduce injuries in the workplace. And of course, this body's already passed House Bill 53, which is sitting and hasn't had a hearing in the other body yet, which would bring our penalties for safeties in the workplace up to that of around the Washington State level. And that is the number one thing we can do to cut costs in this area, is to keep people from getting hurt in the workplace. So since we've had that inaction on the other side, the House Labor and Commerce added an incentive provision into the Labor and Commerce version that's currently onto the Judiciary Committee to say that if somebody was kicked into a sign risk pool, as the representative from Spinard identified earlier, but they had no safety violations and they instituted a accepted safety program in the workplace, that they would be entitled to an additional rebate for that year that they met those qualifications from their comp insurance. Now, some of the insurers have shown the willingness to do this already, have done it voluntarily, but the vast majority of them don't. And a lot of these people are strictly, very unfairly kicked into the assigned risk pool for no good reason other than they're too small to be significant enough for an insurance company to come down and look at their actual track record on safety. So I'm real happy that we've got that provision in there, and that's another way to address this problem. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to let the members know what we did on this issue in Labor and Commerce. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We would ask unanimous consent. We stand in adjournment till 11 a.m. Monday.
11 a.m. Monday.